This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And here we are. We are live here on Pet Life Radio and Ask the Vet to Talk to Jeff and Instagram Live. And I'm here live from the American Veterinary Medical Association meeting, AVMA, in Washington, D.C. So I am now on the Eastern time zone, so I'm where many of you are. So anyway, I want to request to join. I got to be very careful with those. So I'm waving. I want good questions. My sister, who's not on yet, and I will make sure she joined us at some point. So anyway, here for you, pets. You know the drill. Any questions you have asked, just go ahead and ask away. We love your questions because with your questions, it gives us great stuff to talk about on the show. There are a lot of new things going on here. You know, I noticed at the trade show, a couple of things that I'm noticing here. Let's talk about the show at one point. So first of all, it's more of a lot of academia. It is the association itself. Not nearly as big as VMX in Orlando, not nearly as big as Western Veterinary Conference, WVC, in Vegas. But, I mean, it's well attended. At CDC, because of it being the American Veterinary Medical Association meeting, they usually jump from city to city. Just happens to be in D.C., where those of you who are, if you're on the East Coast, you know, it is hot. It is humid. And sometimes it is so moist, you get drizzles. And, I mean, even when you go out at night, it's like, I think yesterday was 88 degrees, and at night it came down to 76. At least in LA, when it's 80 during the day or 85 during the day, at night it's 60, 65. So it makes a huge difference. So anyway, from Cat Snippers, the cat we believe with renal failure is improving, good, but he has severe congestion, so we start liquid doxy. Absolutely, if we have congestion, we should at some point take an X-ray anyway, just to make sure that all it is a URI, upper respiratory infection. But for sure, we definitely, to be safe, we should go ahead and start something as an antibiotic. I like doxycycline for cats. It's pretty easy to administer. And the other one we could try, if not doxy, is Clav Liquid. I think they do well on that as well. And cats, I know a lot of dogs, I mean, Clav Box I love, but it seems to make some dogs nauseous. For some reason, cats, if they like the taste, they seem to do a little better. So what's new here in veterinary medicine? So first of all, you would think with all the big corporate entities taking over veterinary medicine, it would probably reach a point of saturation. No, there are so many aggregators. And I see this, and knowing what it was like to when I got into bed, if you will, with VCA, how it did not turn out well. In fact, I just talked to another colleague of mine who is at one of the big aggregators, and not to mention names. But anyway, he was at one of the big ones, and he still is. But most of the people for the last 10 or 15 years, as one aggregator gets bought out by another or merged with another, he says most of the people that he started with are now gone. And guess what? It keeps in touch with them. They are happier where they are. And that's kind of what I found. When I left the big boss, I am much better off. So because of these aggregators are usually backed by private equity, by VC, venture capital, they're businesses. And what you know about businesses is businesses really look at one thing more than anything, and that's profitability. They're not getting into this to lose money. They want to make money. And let's put it this way, but there are only a few ways to make money, okay, in any business. Number one is increase your fees. Number two, increase your services and take advantage of them, okay? And you can also then do increased volume. So I've always been the volume guy. And a saying that I know people today in certain industries, that if you sell to the masses, you will eat with the classes. But if you sell to the classes, you will eat with the masses. Now, I think what's happening is, and this is not me saying it, this is others within the industry working with some of these large companies, that is that they're raising prices so high that people just can't afford care. Well, then what's the point? Who loses out? You lose out. Your pets definitely lose out. So I'm disenchanted, really, about what's going on. And I think the profession is hurting because of it. And that means if the profession hurts, you guys hurt. So my recommendation is you need to find a good old Marcus Welby kind of vet, someone who is in it for the passion, in it for the love, makes it happen. If they have to, you know, do a payment plan, or if they have to do something to do the treatment, then they do it. And this is the price. This is what we do. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. And on top of that, I'm going to require 50% of my estimate up front. It's unbelievable how disheartening it is for me to see this, and not the kind of vet that I grew up being, or not the kind of industry that it was 40 years ago when I started practicing. It is crazy. How do I feel about stem cell procedures for pets? So I am interestingly hearing more and more about stem cell. In fact, I just spoke to somebody about it about 2 days ago, 3 days ago, Friday. And there are a lot of benefits to stem cell. There's a lot of research being done. I would never say never. I think it's very viable to do it. There are certain companies out there that do it. I don't have anybody in my practice, you know, do it. I, for a while, did PRP, platelet-rich plasma, which in a sense is kind of related to stem cell, and the way that it takes the plasma, platelet-rich, and it does help. We do it for joints. I was injecting the PRP into joints. We take a blood sample, a lot of blood, unfortunately, take the blood, spin it down, doing a bunch of stuff. There's a special machine. It spins the blood down super, super fast. And then we pour off and we spin it again. I mean, it's a process, but I mean, from 25 or so cc's of blood, you may end up with 2 cc's of platelet-rich plasma, but it's really cool stuff. So yes, I am a fan. I would 100% say yes, go for it. A paralyzed French bulldog who has done her pred, but still has difficulty walking. She walks like a penguin and drags her back leg still. So again, we don't know what the problem is. Yes, the pred will help with inflammation, but unless you do an MRI or CT, MRI preferably, then you really don't know. Was this something, or should this be something surgical? Is there something that is truly, truly putting pressure on the spinal cord? Where is it? How extensive is it? Would surgery be helpful? So it is, without having those tests, it's really difficult for me to give you a direction. So I would say if the pred, now the pred is great for anti-inflammatory, not something you want to use long-term, definitely should be on at this point some sort of alternate day therapy. But if the problem is still there despite that, then I think the next step is to get some better answers. So, you know, when there is still movement, when there is sensation, and it's just pain, then we're looking at what we call a type 2 disc. I would 100% offer the pred as an alternative without having to go through the much more extensive testing. But if it's not painful anymore and it's just mechanical and the pred hasn't helped, then it's time to get more information. So I would recommend CT or MRI. All right, next question from Actumi. My 6-year-old Persian cat has been going to the bathroom trash looking for plastic to chew. I can discourage her, but I do need to concern about the pica. Yes, you do need to be concerned. Cats, for some reason, love that crunch of the plastic. Don't know why. My cats are the same way. If you like, you know, like some bottles have a little clear cellophane plastic around it, you take it off, they attack it. They want to chew on it. They want to play with it. I don't know why, but they do it. And for whatever reason, they seem to get a lot of joy and satisfaction out of those pieces of plastic. So my recommendation, because you don't want them swallowing it, if it's a very small piece, it'll probably pass. But otherwise, you do not want them eating on that stuff. It's not toxic. It is more of an irritant, a gastro or intestinal irritant. It could cause, depending on the size, it could cause some blockage or partial blockage. So why wait to see if it was to be a problem? I would say no. Just remove it. Don't let them have it. And but it is very, very common. Next up, red light therapy. So again, this is something where I don't have that much, you know. Look, sometimes they refer to red light therapy as cold laser. I do believe in that. In fact, I had a problem with my knee, and someone said to me, said, well, you have a cold laser machine, don't you? Aren't you doing cold laser? And I said, you know, I never even thought about it. Of course I should do it. So I'm going to do some cold laser on my knee, but it has benefit. Is it something that's going to help in every case? Absolutely not. There is nothing that's going to help in every case, unless the major risk of doing something drastic or dramatic. But no, you want to try, whether it's acupuncture, whether it's laser therapy, red light laser, whether it is the drugs, if whether it's PRP, whether you know it's stem cell, whatever it is, you're not going to get an across-the-board success rate. I remember when I was thinking about laser therapy. I went to one of my colleagues, friends, mavens in pain. In fact, she was, I think, one of the first veterinarians to be admitted to the American Academy of Pain Management. It was a human academy, not veterinary, but she is a veterinarian. And now there are a number of them that have sort of joined and become admitted into this academy. So she had those little letters next to her name. And I asked her, by the way, she's also certified in acupuncture. And that's important because when I asked her about laser, it was just coming out in the market. And I said, tell me, what do you know about this laser? Is it any good? Are we wasting our time? She goes, Jeff, let me tell you, I am certified in acupuncture. I've had cases where acupuncture just didn't do great. It helped a little, but not great. And I went to cold laser and it was dramatic. And that's all I needed to hear. So if I knew then what I know now, so I 100% recommend it and I use it. I can't tell you it's going to help in every case. It's not. But when you have options, is you're going to explore many options that are not super expensive, that are relatively easy to use. Why not do it? There's no downside. And, again, so I've had cases where they made tremendous difference. And I have cases where it didn't help that much, but I still try it. Bethany's here now. I threatened them, Bethany, that I was going to talk about what you and I talked about this week. So it's my sister, Beth. Here we go. So my IBD cat is zombidesinide every other day. When I go to every 2 days, she gets severe reaction diarrhea. Suggestions? Well, first of all, cats tolerate steroids better than dogs long-term, but I would still like to see every other day. What you might do is instead of going every second day, on the other, cut it down to a half. So go whole every other day, then half, then whole, then half. And then when you get down to that, then go every third day, meaning skip 2 days in between, go back to a whole. See if that helps. You're sort of easing off. If that doesn't work, then you just stay every other day. As long as, of course, monitor your cat, make sure you have a blood test done, make sure that the liver values, all the values are fine. As I said, cats tolerate the steroids a little bit better than dogs. So if all is good and the cat is doing well, then stay with every other day and just go for it. Maybe stay every other day and do 3/4 of a dose every other day instead of trying to get to every third day. But whatever, there are some ways you can sort of slowly go down and see. Okay, any other good questions? So what else? AI, seeing a lot of either artificial intelligence. It seems like that phrase, they don't like to term it that. Machine learning, maybe. That there are a number of groups. I'm here, for example, with ScribbleVet. And ScribbleVet is one of the companies that I work with. And we are doing AI, artificial intelligence scribes, meaning note-taking in the office. And as many of you know that have come to me, you see me talking to my computer as I'm talking to you. And I'm making sure the computer is picking up everything you say as far as the history, all the questions you have, my answers, and it all goes into the medical record. It's amazing. So there are a number of companies out now doing this scribe technology. There are some other companies I'm working with next, sitting next to me in a booth is a great company. Okay. And it is basically a device that attaches to your stethoscope, which gives me a lot more information than just hearing the lung sounds and hearing the heart sounds. And it is much more accurate. So I'm loving this. So I'm taking one of these things home with me. Those of you who see me, you're going to see. And it also gives reports. It is fascinating. So I like that as well. So there's another company that is also takes a lot of the history and data from a pet's exam and then puts it all together that with the problems that this pet may be having now, its age, its breed, its diet, all these things go in and they are now with some decent accuracy. Of course, it's going to get better predicting what conditions that we may have to deal with in the future and what we can do to stop them. That's really cool as well. Talk about preventive medicine, but preventive medicine not based on generalities, but based on specifics for this pet. Love it. Anyway, for those of you here on Pet Life Radio, we are going to break for our commercial. Those of you here on Instagram, stay with me and we'll answer some more questions. Don't go away.
You know the expression, cats have 9 lives. Well, what if you can give them one more? The Give Them 10 movement is on a mission to help give cats an extra life. How? With spay and neuter. Spaying or neutering your cat helps them live a longer, healthier life. and it helps control free-roaming cat populations too. Learn more about the benefits of spay and neuter and meet Scooter, the neutered cat, at givethem10.org. That's givethem10.org.
Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets. On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
So we are back here live. I'm unmuting myself back on Pet Life Radio. We're back talking about coprophagy in dogs. That eating poop, sometimes their own poop, somebody other dog's poop, on a walk. Why they do it? Again, I don't know. So if you have an answer, a legitimate answer that has been substantiated and tested, let me know, because I want to know, because the dogs I ask, they never tell me. They refuse to tell me why they do it. So one of the things we can do is if a dog is only eating its own poop or her own poop, you can put something in her food. There's a powder, it's called Forbid. It's a hydrolyzed protein powder that apparently imparts some taste to the stool that makes it taste like stool should. And they stop. If you have a dog that's eating the other dog's poop as well, you have to put the Forbid in all of their poops. There's another thing that I've been told to try. I have not tried it. Fortunately, I've been lucky. I don't get many of my dogs have coprophagia, but you make a mixture, a super hot mixture of cayenne and wasabi and hot sauce and all those things, and put it in a sprayer and spray it on the poops before your dog gets a chance to eat it. Spray on poops outside when you walk. Then here's the tricky part, and this is the part that's important. You can't just leave it on the poop. You got to spray their tongue full strength. They have to know what it tastes like full strength, because if you put a spray on the poop, it's going to dilute over time. It's going to aerate. It's going to lose some of its potency. But if they spray it on them full strength to the point where they're salivating, getting that taste, they'll smell it. They know what smell to avoid. B, they'll taste it. So if they go near another dog's poop or poop that had been pre-sprayed with this stuff, they hopefully will act as deterrent and they don't want to do it. So that is a suggestion. Is it going to work 100%? I don't know, but try it. All right. Should you put a dog to sleep if it's very hard, but still eating and walking a little, I assume? Very old, but still eating? She's still walking a very little bit alert. She's a senior dog. Look, it's your dog. The criteria that we've talked about are many. The decision is yours. Do I think the dog is suffering? No. If it's still eating and it's walking around a little bit and it's very old, then it's getting old. I mean, how many people you see walking around with a cane or a little walker? You're going to put them to sleep? So, I mean, as long as they still have it here, as long as they still eat, as long as they're still excited to see you, as long as there's still something about their day that excites them, then I don't think they're ready. So what are my criteria? This is not my answer to do it or not do it. These are just things that I want you to consider, to think about when faced with a decision, should we or shouldn't we? And that is, do they seem happy? Is there anything in their day that excites them? Do they get excited when you come home from work or food time? Are they still eating? Are they in such extreme pain that they're crying in pain? When you touch them, they're screaming, okay? Are they living or are they just existing? They're there. They're breathing, but they don't move all day long. They're sitting in one position, all right? They're getting stuck in corners because of dementia. I mean, if there's nothing they look forward to, when you look at your dog, do you feel sorry for them? If you start feeling sorry for your dog, then maybe, and they have other these criteria too, there's nothing that excites them anymore, nothing that makes them happy anymore. They're not really eating. Then what's the life? So these are the things that you want to consider. I will tell you this from a friend of mine who is actually a co-founder of Lap of Love, and that's a service that does house call euthanasia and hospice care. And she said to me, and it's so true, she says, you can never make a mistake by saying goodbye a little bit too early, but you can make a terrible mistake by waiting too long. We don't want to wait long. We don't want them to suffer. That is in our hands. And when you feel that you want the dog to go or cat to go peacefully at home on their own, that may be cool. It may happen. But if it's going to happen and they're suffering until that happens, trust me, it's not worth it. Please don't. All right. Hot topic. Give my dogs fat-free organic yogurt daily. 1-2 teaspoons daily, much cheaper than probiotics. Your thoughts? I think that's fine. Yogurt is full of probiotics, fat-free. The organic, I mean, that's great. But look, dairy is not poisonous, okay? Now, could it be irritative? Could too much dairy cause diarrhea? Are most dogs, once they wean, become lactose intolerant? Yes, but poisonous? No, it's volume related. My dogs love cheese. And when I used to use grapes for it, which now I find out is no. I never, ever had a dog that had grape toxicity, ever. But it does happen. It's a reality. So we got to be careful. So now, instead of grapes, I give Lou a piece of cheese. So are they eating a block of cheddar every day? No, not even close. But a little dairy is fine. How about even eating a little ice cream? Am I the only one that likes ice cream? No. Dogs love ice cream too. So again, a little bit is fine. So all of you here, okay, now Bethany, she's on. Let's talk about what we talked about the other day. And that is she and her husband, Steve, called me and they wanted to know, what's the truth about kibble? Does kibble actually reduce tartar buildup in the mouth? All right, because their dogs have tartar and they eat kibble. So here's the answer. Here's my answer. My answer is it doesn't make a difference. And here's my theory why I don't think it's really an issue. Canned food, soft food, semi-moist, whatever. First of all, a couple of questions. Many of you, I'm sure by now, have had your dogs to see me or some veterinarian for dental cleaning. Which teeth seem to be the teeth that accumulate the most tartar? Okay? Simple. The back teeth, the premolars and molars. That's a fact that you got to kind of put in the back of your head. That's a fact. So when they're chewing, regardless of what they're chewing, they're crunching or bushing with those back teeth. Now, let's talk about film, plaque. Plaque, okay, that film is what remains on the tooth after we eat. And it's therefore logically say which teeth, chances are, would accumulate the most plaque. These teeth here, the incisors and the fangs, the canines, aren't really used that much for eating, if at all, or the premolars and molars, which are used all the time. And the answer, of course, the premolars and molars. Ah, so they're the ones that regardless of what the consistency of the food is, they get the most. So now what happens to the film, to plaque? Ah, so if I tell you that plaque, if not removed by brushing, within 3 days, probably max four, it starts to harden. It starts to become tartar. How? The oral bacteria and the saliva mix work on that plaque, that film that you didn't remove from brushing, and now it becomes tartar or calculus. It hardens. Now brushing is not going to get it off. Ah, so where do the salivary ducts enter into the mouth? Well, wouldn't you know it? Right over in the back of the mouth, right over those premolars and molars. So now you look at the equation. You have the most plaque film. You have the most saliva. You have the bacteria everywhere. So that's why those teeth are getting the most tartar. It had nothing to do with the consistency of the food. So regardless of the crunchy and the eat, and is it removing the plaque? Apparently not. The only way to remove the plaque, and you can have chew bows, you can have chew toys. Yeah, I tell people, it's not a waste. It's not good for nothing. But no, the only way to remove that plaque on a consistent basis is through brushing. You've seen me. I know we've talked about the tricks that I have to get your dog's teeth brushed, but that is the only way. In fact, so many people, I told this to the other day when I was talking to them, is that, a client will come in 6 months after dental cleaning, and I look at the teeth, full of plaque, full of tartar. And I say, well, you have to do a dentist. What? Dentistry? We just did 4 months ago. I look at the record. It was 6 months ago, but that's okay. Everyone's memory is a little different. But 6 months ago, I already know the answer. But tell me, how often are you brushing your pet's teeth? I guess never, but tell me an answer. And they'll say, no, I do it once a week. Tell you what, let's do a little home study. Is that I want you, not 6 months worth of this, not 2 months, 1 month, 4 weeks, that's it. I want you to brush your teeth only once a week for the next 4 weeks. Let's see what your teeth look like after a month, let alone 6 months. And when you put it like that, they know, yes, you got to brush the pet's teeth. And otherwise, you're going to, and even look, how many of us go in, brush our teeth at least twice a day for about 3-4 minutes, twice a day at least, and still have to go in In my case, every 4 months, 3 times a year for cleaning. Maybe it's a half a year, every twice a year. Maybe it's once a year, whatever. You're still going in despite the fact that we're brushing and we're on a schedule and we're flossing. And we still got to go in. So why is it so unusual to think that your pet shouldn't go in at least once every quarter, once every 6 months? So anyway, all right. Excessive amounts of allergy this year, hopscotch is just chewing inside his back legs and face. You know, it's hard to tell. First of all, hopscotch is phenomenal. Love that dog. So you know what? It boils down to allergens, the seasons, how many pollens in the air, what might be around the house. Usually when a dog is going in the inner thighs, on the abdomen, it is atopy. Atopic dermatitis is inhaled allergens. And it all depends on the environment. Is there a lot of grass? Is he hanging on grass more? Is he going to a dog park? Are there trees? I mean, spring and summer, there's always an increase in the allergens during spring and summer. It is what it is. So again, there are many new medications we can do. We have injectables. We have pills. There's good old-fashioned steroids, which I still try to avoid, but sometimes we need to. Sometimes we need to do a pill version and injection both together. It all depends on the dog. And a lot of times, remember, once these dogs start scratching, they create a secondary infection called secondary pyoderma. That in of itself is really itchy as well. So if we don't put these dogs on antibiotics in addition to whatever we're doing for allergy, they are then going to continue to scratch. So that's why, again, lots of trees, lots of grass. These are all components that contribute to our dog's allergies. If there's liver going on there, this is for Pax's Pet Wash. Yes, we need to monitor that. Continue to monitor. You can also put on a liver supplement that may help. But again, unless the dog is really sick because of the liver values, I wouldn't stop giving some of the medication, but it just doesn't sound like really. There are other things we can do for pain. Okay, there's that new Librela shot. We have to talk about that. That'll be one of my subjects for next week, by the way, because I picked up a lot of good stuff here at the show about that. And there is gabapentin. There are some other medications that could be used both as anti-inflammatories. Again, you can't use a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory along with a steroidal anti-inflammatory. So, but if you haven't tried at least a non-steroidal, try that. Gabapentin, good for pain. Maybe the Librela injection. Cold laser also works very well. Acupuncture works very well. So I would not say goodbye to this dog yet until more things have been explored and see how he or she does. And you hear some kids yelling and screaming in the background because it's summertime. And this is a show that a lot of people bring their families, for good or for bad, call it what you like. But look, it's really cool to be here in D.C. I've been here before, so I've seen a lot of the sights. Plus, I'm pretty busy. All right. I think we've gotten to everybody. So anyway, thank you for joining me. If you have any questions during the week, you can always reach out to me. You can reach me on drjeffpetliferadio.com. Here on Instagram, Werbs_DVM. Just put in Jeff Werber. By the way, for all those of you who have friends that are not following me, I'm going to be so bold as to say, call them up and say, you got to follow Dr. Jeff. Okay? It's important. I want people to have access to this kind of dialogue, to learn from me for whatever knowledge I still have left in this brain, this shrinking brain of mine. So it's very important to let them know to come join us live on Sundays here on Pet Life Radio, here on Instagram Live. So again, the more I can do to help you with your pets, the more successful I feel as an individual, as a veterinarian. And that's the sense of satisfaction I'm going after, helping people with their pets. So on that note, we'll see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Instagram, here on Pet Life Radio. And have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you next week.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.